Hello, I'm Terrence McNally, and welcome to today's podcast.
Are you feeling stressed and anxious these days? In addition to whatever personal challenges you might face, are you worried about the economy, jobs, housing foreclosures, justice, fairness, wars and threats of new wars, climate change, environmental pollution, and our failing education and healthcare systems, and finally the domination of democracy by huge corporations and the super rich? Well, so am I, and so is today's guest, Ohio Congressman Tim Ryan. He recognizes all those concerns, and he offers a radical solution, radical in its original meaning, of having to do with the roots of things. He's written a book, A Mindful Nation, How a Simple Practice Can Help Us Reduce Stress, Improve Performance, and Recapture the American Spirit. Ryan has a daily practice of mindful meditation, and now he's advocating that the spread of similar practices could help heal us, not just as individuals, but as a nation. And his book is filled with examples of how mindfulness is being successfully applied in education, in healthcare, even in the military. Imagine a mindful congressman who imagines a mindful nation. Tim Ryan is currently serving in his fifth term, representing Ohio's 17th Congressional District, and he was first elected at the age of 29. He's a member of the House Armed Services Committee, the House Budget Committee, co-chairman of the Congressional Manufacturing Caucus, and co-chairman of another caucus that has to do with addiction and recovery. And Congressman Ryan has a daily mindfulness practice, as I said, and is the author of A Mindful Nation. Welcome, Tim Ryan.
Hey, great to be with you. Thanks for that nice introduction there.
Okay. I like listeners to get a feel for the people behind the work and the ideas that we talk about. So can you share briefly your path to the work that you do today? Feel free to note mentors, turning points, moments of decision, and not just about mindfulness, but how you chose to, you know, go into public service, become a congressman, and how, you know, the mindfulness piece fits into that.
Well, you know, like most people, I had a lot of really great role models growing up. I had a beautiful mother, Italian mother, who prayed the rosary a lot, along with some Italian grandparents who lived a couple blocks down who prayed the rosary a lot. And they were just committed people. My grandfather was a usher at church, Our Lady of Mount Carmel Church in Niles, Ohio. My grandmother was a part of the rosary group. My mother helped out at the festivals and at the school, and a lot of activism, a lot of volunteerism, primarily through the church and my grandfather's union. He was a steel worker and really grew up in an environment where, by watching those role models, they showed us, my brother and I, on that it's about caring about other people. It's about helping other people. And, you know, spent some years in Catholic school, and at one point had a priest, Father Crumley, teach me centering prayer.
Really?
And that was where kind of the real meditative side started, you know, on and off, flirted with different kinds of meditation since then. And ultimately, you know, come from an older industrial area that was pretty hard hit economically. A lot of corruption many years ago, and I just kind of rolled the dice and thought, you know, I wanted to serve and saw politics as a real opportunity to do that, more at the local level, quite frankly, than the national level. And then that evolved into, you know, in kind of a parallel track with my interest in meditation and different of world religions and learning more and understanding more about that, until in 2008, I was a Democrat and had spent most of my career working to get the Democrats back in charge of Congress, and working very closely with Nancy Pelosi. And eventually in 2006, we took the House back. But it was a very busy time, very active, a lot of traveling, a lot of fundraising, kind of the necessities of politics. Was involved in the 2008 election between Hillary and the president. And then about that summer, I realized I was 35 years old and well on my way to being burnt out by the time I was 40. You know, the technology, the information, the travel, the fundraising. And found a 5-day silent retreat led by Jon Kabat-Zinn 2 days after the November election. And checked my two Blackberries at the door after the election, and didn't talk to anyone, didn't write, didn't read, didn't do anything but what Jon Kabat-Zinn told me to do. And most of that was spend time in silence. And in the middle of that retreat, I had about a 36-hour period of complete silence, as well as the other participants in the retreat, and really just had a profound experience of being in the present moment. And it reminded me a lot of playing sports back in the day as a kid, and when you'd be in the zone and thought, this needs to be in schools, this needs to be in our healthcare system, someone needs to teach this to every kid in America, and went on a journey. Met John after the retreat, and he said, sent me on a journey to meet the scientists, the educators, the healthcare practitioners who are implementing mindfulness. And ever since then, I've had a daily mindfulness practice, and found my passion in life is to figure out how to get mindfulness implemented into the world around us.
So one thing I hear is that you're still having to do all the things you were doing.
Yeah,
you're still a congressman.
Go away.
Right, you're still a congressman. We've still got other problems. You still have to run for re-election. You still have to raise money. And you not only find time for the mindfulness practice, but you wrote a book, and now you have another cause on this one. So, in fact, you're busier than you were before.
Yeah, in some ways I really am. But I feel like I really have a new energy to my work because, you know, like most of us who have a meditation practice, you know, you think like your meditation practice is one area of your life and then your work and your family and everything else is another area of your life and never the two shall meet. And really what you do learn over time of practicing and reading and trying to really understand what this is about is that it's about bringing this to your life. It's about, you know, being mindful as you are acting in your life, as you are participating in the opera, you know, as you're participating in the game, to be mindful. And that has really come together for me since I wrote the book, because there was no more, oh, I do this on the side. It is now like, this is what I do, this is what I advocate for, and yeah, the world doesn't go away.
Very good. I'm speaking with Congressman Tim Ryan, Ohio Congressman Tim Ryan, about his new book, A Mindful Nation. Okay, how did the book happen?
Well, I went on I went on this journey that Jon Kabat-Zinn sent me on to meet the scientists, the healthcare, and the workers and the educators. And as I went and traveled the country and met them, I was just so impressed and inspired by the work that they were doing. Yeah, I just thought, man, this needs to be a book, and it has huge policy implications, so, you know, someone in the policy area should probably write it, and it should be a book that really is down to earth and that could communicate to, say, people in Ohio, for example, of why the this stuff can be very beneficial. And, you know, I was felt like I was just the person to do it, and obviously had talked to Jon Kabat-Zinn about it very early on, and he was excited about the prospects of that and the contribution that a book could make. But it really was the inspiration I was getting from Richie Davidson at the University of Madison, Wisconsin at Madison, and Linda Lantieri and Goldie Hawn and Saki Santarelli at UMass Center for Mindfulness. These people were so inspiring to me. They're pioneers. You know, they are pioneers of, I think, what can completely transform our society as we continue to get mindfulness out. And I just had to write the book and get a platform to be able to talk about this in a really down-to-earth way.
Yeah, one of the things I really like about your book, Congressman Tim Ryan, is that I have a mindfulness practice, and I've had John. Actually, I had, we'll talk about this when we get to schools, but I had John and Myla on when they did Everyday Blessings, the mindful parenting book, which was just a real treat, and have had him on since. Sharon Salzberg, Jack Kornfield, Richie Davidson, all these folks. And
all the all-stars.
Yeah, yeah. And one of the things I like about your book, because I've looked at all of them, is you really spell out, maybe not more than all of them, but more than most of them, what's happening in this program and this program and this program. And then you have that wonderful list of resources in the back that tells people where they can go to learn more. And that's what I think is a wonderful, I mean, it's a fairly short book. What is it? 220, something like
that? Yeah, something right around there. Yeah.
I mean, so this is not a big tome to pick up, but in addition to your own personal experience, in addition to your advocacy in it, you also take us to people who are working with schools, people that are working with hospitals, people that are working with the military, et cetera, and one by one, and as well as the scientific experiments. So I really praise you for that. Let me ask you about this. What has been the reception among, first, your colleagues in Congress, and then your constituents?
Well, it's really interesting. I must say, we had two of my colleagues, Congressman Joe Crowley from New York, Congressman John Larson, had a book party for me last night, and we had many members of Congress come in and out with a real genuine interest of what this was about, asking me questions. And since the book has come out, there's been articles in Politico, for example, a D.C. kind of Capitol Hill newspaper. We did a talk here in Washington. Book Notes or Book TV did something on C-SPAN. And I've been amazed at the people who have come up to me and said, now tell me more about this. Tell me what this is like. Members of Congress. I had a gentleman, conservative Republican, today come up to me, and he's like, dude, I started doing what you were saying,
man.
No kidding. And he's like, I'm so stressed out. I can't take it anymore. And he says, I started meditating. And this is based on me just talking to him briefly and him reading some of the local, like, Capitol Hill newspaper articles about the book. And I think everyone's open, and members of Congress are as stressed out, if not more stressed out, than other Americans, just the travel, the family, the stress, the fundraising, the craziness. So there's a real openness here to it. And then I would also say my constituents, same there. I mean, I was in a bowling alley a couple weeks ago at a family birthday party, and there was a gentleman there, blue jeans and a NASCAR hat on, in Warren, Ohio, and started asking me about the book and how interesting he was in the topic of the book. And it's crossing all of these different demographic, geographic, political lines, because we're all in the same spot.
Yeah. And I think one of the things also is that you yourself are an unlikely, if you will, an unlikely person to write this book. And so I think the unlikely interested other person looks and says, well, if that unlikely person it's made that much difference and he's that convinced, maybe it's open, maybe it's something for me too.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's just who I am. I'm a 6'4", 220-pound former quarterback from Ohio.
Yeah.
It's Catholic. And, a Rust Belt Democratic politician who, grew up in an Italian community at the Italian festival. And my grand, just check every box.
Yeah.
Of, like, what's a normal Ohio kid grow up like? That was me, and here I am. And that's why people were like, really, you do that? And my colleagues were stunned that I not only wrote a book, but that I wrote a book about meditation. And it's been great because you can see the guard come down.
That's wonderful.
They look at me and they say, wow, if you do this, it must be something to it.
Yeah. No, I mean, when I first, someone offered me the book, I went, a congressman has written a book on mindfulness. How can I turn that down? One thing I was curious about, do you think that the link of meditation to Eastern spiritual practices is an obstacle for some people? Or do you think that's changed over time? The reason I say that is when I first got in touch with meditation, it was Maharishi Mahesh Yogi. It was transcendental meditation. It was definitely had an Eastern influence. I didn't take it up until I read Herbert Benson's book, The Relaxation Response. Mm-hmm. So I waited till it was, dressed in Western clothes and before I took it up. And I wonder if you think that has already happened, that people now don't see it so much as an Eastern spiritual practice.
Well, there's obviously still going to be some out there, the Pat Robertsons of the world who are, telling people to break Buddha statues, that have a level of intolerance.
And that yoga's bad because of that. Yeah.
Right. And I think we've come such a long way because, one, I think out of necessity, I think people are really recognizing that, one, this is very helpful, but two, This is about breathing. I mean, you know, we're not talking about anything other than breathing in and out, and maybe try to pay attention to it a little bit as you're going along and take a little break to stop and really be in the present moment. And I do. I mean, you hear words like Zen and karma being used in the, you know, as common parlance today, you know, of just people around. They, are using it in ways that they never have before. So I think it's really starting to infuse our society in a way to where all of that mystical kind of approach to it is not being seen as necessary. And we talk about that in the book. And actually, you know, I like to talk about in the book that, hey, you know what, you can practice mindfulness and still keep your religion.
Well, that's what I was going to say. You're still a practicing Catholic. And for you, the two fit together fine.
Yeah, well, you know, when you're at the Mass, you're actually at the Mass. You know, I that's my favorite part about being a Catholic is going to the Mass. Not that I go as much as my mom would like me to go, but when I do go, I just really enjoy the ritual. And after practicing mindfulness, you can enjoy it in a deeper way. I talk a lot about the one of the great Simpson episodes where Homer Simpson is in the church, packed church, and he's got his headphones on listening to the football game. And in the middle of a quiet period in church, he jumps up and screams because his team's running for a touchdown. And no one else is doing anything, and they all turn around, look at him, and catch him. And so I ask, are you at church or are you listening to the football game? And with mindfulness, if you're at church, you'll be at church. If you're praying the rosary, you'll be praying the rosary. If you're at the ritual, you'll be in present for the ritual. There's no reason why it has to not be that way and why you can't bring mindfulness to that particular religion.
Very good. And now what you're saying there is what it does is it doesn't take you somewhere else. It takes you where you are.
Right.
And it brings you home where you are. One of the things I really remember when I first read and interviewed John and Myla Kabat-Zinn's book, and by the way, for listeners, if that Zinn sounds familiar, Myla is Howard Zinn's daughter. It's about seeing your children. It's about hearing your children. It's about being present with your children. Now, you tend to take that and say this could have an effect not just on within our families, but in our whole nation. How is it you see that happening?
Well, it's a blossoming. It's not a magic wand. And it's, you take everyone in the book, you take the scientists, the educators, you take the healthcare practitioners, the doctors, the nurses, the healthcare workers, you take people in the military that are doing it now, in the Marines, for example, in the Army, you take some of the veterans organizations and different groups that are starting to deal with vets, you really begin to see how this all ties the room together, with, you know, you begin to, use this, for teachers with professional development and also in our colleges of education. And you incorporate these programs into our schools. So kids are beginning to learn mindfulness and social and emotional learning in our schools. We start to train our doctors and our nurses through the schools and the professional developments and the CLEs and the different things that they have to get, you know, recertified. You begin teaching them mindfulness so that doctors are not immediately prescribing medication. They're first saying, okay, now what's going on with you? Mate, why don't you try practicing mindfulness? Here, I'll teach you how. Do it for 15 minutes a day in the morning for 2 weeks and then come back. And if you still have high blood pressure, then we'll talk about medication, but it won't be the first thing we do. Then you talk about, so now the doctor's teaching the patients who may have a kid that's in the school with the kid learning it at the school, and then it's incorporated in the after-school programs and the summer school programs and the summer camps like they're doing out here in Bethesda where Tara Brock's doing a program. We've heard of Upward Bound. She has a program called Inward Bound, and it's basically a mindfulness camp for kids in the summer. And then, you know, you start to see, and then you have veterans, for example, they're using mindfulness now to train Marines, not to be better killers, but to better handle their emotions. And Jon Kabat-Zinn's been involved in some of these studies and others, real marquee players in the mindfulness movement, saying this is really crucial to get this into the military. Well, the average stay for a Marine in the Marines is 5 or 6 years. So they can learn mindfulness and then go back to our communities. And then there's all these teacher integration programs for people in the military. You begin to see how these seeds can continue to get planted. And over, I don't think that too long of a period of time, 5 or 10 years, people will be slowing down and being more mindful. And I think that will change the way we address the issues you talked about at the very beginning of the program, this huge gap, this huge issue of inequality in the United States, the poverty issue in the United States, how are we going to deal with that, the food systems and what we put on our food and how we transport our food in the United States, and how do we move to more farmers markets, more local produce, more bike trails, more downtown developments, more, you know, policies that prevent urban sprawl. How do we redesign our cities? How do we do manufacturing in a more energy-efficient way? How do we have policies that move us towards more renewables? I mean, all of these things aren't going to happen until we all stop and say, what the hell are we doing right now? We're not going down the right road. And, oh, by the way, nobody's really happy about what we're doing right now. And all the polling will show you that. And if we just slow down, we can then recalibrate like a GPS recalibrates when you get lost. Hold on, changing route here. And that's what we need to do. But that doesn't happen until we slow down and we start planting some of these seeds.
So it is, so your sense is if individuals, one, by thousand, by million, begin to slow down and be more present in the actual moment, more mindful of what their life is actually like at that moment, that those sorts of policies that seem to make sense will be more likely.
Right. Start where you are. People say, well, what am I supposed to do? Well, if you're practicing mindfulness, you know, let's all listen to what it's telling us. Start where you are. Wherever you go, there you are, as Jon Kabat-Zinn's book tells us. So if you're a mindfulness practitioner and you're in Los Angeles and you have kids in schools and you want to make a difference and change the way the world is, don't, you know, buy a Mindful Nation. In the back there's a resource section, and there's groups and organizations who have already implemented mindfulness into classrooms. So figure out who those organizations are, learn about what they did, and then start running local mindfulness practitioners for the school board. Contact your state representative and ask, are the state policies helping implement things like mindfulness and social emotional learning in the schools? And that's just one example. What if you have a family support group for veterans or soldiers that are, you know, over in the Middle East right now or in Afghanistan right now? Wherever you are, start something and start fertilizing it and start watering it and putting sunshine on it. And people are doing this all over the country, which is another reason why I wanted to do the book, because I think a lot of people involved in this work don't realize there are other people in other fields doing the exact same thing. And my idea with A Mindful Nation is to throw gasoline on that, those fires, and really get this thing burning so that we can begin to have these changes. But yeah, it's a blossoming. It's very organic. There's not going to be a Department of Mindfulness.
Right, right.
You know, there's not going to be a Secretary of Mindfulness. And I tease Jon Kabat-Zinn. If there was, he would be it, but there's never going to be one, you know, as far as we know. So let's start with the institutions that are already out there and infuse these institutions and the current programming with mindfulness.
Yeah. I'm Terrence McNally. That's the voice of Tim Ryan, congressman from Ohio. We're talking about his new book, A Mindful Nation, and obviously something he is very passionate about, which is the spread of mindfulness practice throughout our society, not as a substitute for anything, but as an opening to everything.
Right. Good way of putting it.
Thanks. We got just a few minutes. If you could, a couple of the research findings that sort of are where, you know, you've talked about how that trip that you took, kind of traveling around the country, meeting all the scientists doing the work, that just sounds like such a wonderful experience. But a couple of the things that might make someone who's kind of either skeptical or you know, thinking that this isn't as solid as it might be.
Well, you know, again, there's science coming online all the time about how the brain changes and the different influences that mindfulness can have, where they strap a fMRI on monks' heads and different peoples and can see these changes. The one study that I find very significant, there'll be more coming out, especially with the Marines and the military, hopefully in the next few months, but the one that was really stunning to me was the issue that Jon Kabat-Zinn and Richie Davidson did on psoriasis patients. And they had a control group that went in and got light box treatment, which is one of the treatments they give for psoriasis. And the one group went in, got their treatment, came back out. The other group went in and practiced mindfulness while they were in the light box. That group that practiced mindfulness while they were in the light box needed four times less the treatments than the control group. Now, as a public policy maker, I'm sitting here thinking, okay, how much is it for Medicare or Medicaid or the health insurance industry for one trip into the light box? Now, times that by four and multiply that by the number of people who have psoriasis, you're starting to see real savings. And when you look at what stress does for heart disease, high blood pressure, ulcers, type 2 diabetes, erectile dysfunction, I mean, soup to nuts, stress is really costing us a lot of money. So what we really need is a comprehensive longitudinal study, 10-year longitudinal study, that can really begin to account for how much savings could be. And another thing is how the stress that a lot of us are under inflames our bodies.
Right. Inflammation, which they find is at the root of many chronic illnesses, that there is a linkage between stress, cortisol, and inflammation.
Right. And it's, again, it's heart disease, high blood pressure, some of these different problems you have with your organs because of the inflammation. And they're starting to find mindfulness as a cooling agent, basically, for the inflammation. You're too hot. I mean, you think about it. It makes complete sense. We say where I come from, where there's a lot of Italian people, they're telling a story about someone who got them really upset, and they said, "I got hot."
Yeah.
Well, you did.
Yeah.
You got hot, you got inflamed, you got stressed out, and that can happen when you have this. And this is why I'm a congressman and wrote this book, because that has policy implications. The level of inequality has health implications on our families. The level of inequality and violence has implications on our kids' inability to learn. One of the great things is the understanding of how the brain works now. We find out when a young kid or a soldier or any of us are under a lot of stress, the older part of our brain, called your amygdala, where we handle our fight or flight or our stress response, the amygdala deals with all the information that's coming into our brain at that point. It's all processed in the amygdala. It's fight, flight, or freeze. And these kids who live in violent neighborhoods or are involved in abusive relationships, that's where they have high levels of stress, and it's pretty consistent and constant, so it's all processed in their amygdala. Well, you actually need your prefrontal cortex if you really want to have a good quality education. And in your prefrontal cortex, up in your forehead, you have your working memory, decision making, attention span. All of these things are handled in the prefrontal cortex. But when you're under a lot of stress, your prefrontal cortex doesn't even come into play. It's all dealt with in your amygdala. But what mindfulness does, and other practices too, can calm your amygdala down. And when you calm your amygdala down, then the information can be processed into your prefrontal cortex. So these kids that been having such a difficult time figuring out, how can we get these kids to learn, we're now, with the understanding of the brain science, we can figure it out. And what calms your amygdala down? Affection, caring, compassion, empathy, breathing, mindfulness, things that calm you down. So when you have smaller class sizes, so when you have your school's designed in a way where there's a lot of mentorship and integration, and then a mindfulness practice, and then a general concern for your social and emotional well-being, your awareness, teaching kids how to deal with their emotions. Oh, here comes anger. What do I do when I'm angry? And then walk them through what they do when they're angry to kind of let it go. These things will all calm your amygdala down and allow your prefrontal cortex to work. Now, why in the hell wouldn't we want that in every classroom?
Absolutely.
You know,
absolutely.
I mean, just when you see the science, and we have this going on in schools in Youngstown and Warren, Ohio, and you see these kids respond, and you see the teachers tell you how amazing it is, and then you see the Marines are doing it for mental discipline and awareness, and Google's teaching it, and they have this whole program called Search Inside Yourself, and Procter & Gamble, and Target, and General Mills, again, why wouldn't we want our young kids to learn this? Why wouldn't we have our doctors teaching this to our patients? I mean, this is about as common sense as it gets. And it's about as conservative as it gets, because it's about teaching kids about responsibility. It's about making sure you take care of yourself. It's about making sure you participate in your own health care. You know, so it cuts across the political spectrum in such a beautiful way that I think it could lay the foundation for a real renaissance in the United States.
Again, the book is A Mindful Nation, How a Simple Practice Can Help Us Reduce Stress, Improve Performance, and Recapture the American Spirit. And you can learn more at amindfulnation.com. You can listen to this week's conversations and many others anytime during the week by linking to the podcast. You can also sign up to have it delivered to you weekly. You can do that at iTunes or at my website, terrencemcnally.net, terrencemcnally.net, or aworldthatjustmightwork.com. They're the same website. You can also check out Free Forum with Terrence McNally on Facebook. You can follow me on Twitter at McNally Terrence, and you can sign up for a weekly announcement by email that tells you who's going to be on, what we're going to talk about, and a few articles on the issues. You can do that either at my website or by emailing me at T.E. McNally, M-C-N-A-L-L-Y, T.E. McNally at mac.com. This program is going to be archived for the next 90 days at kpfk.org. Check audio archive, scroll down by date and time. And finally, thank you to Tim Ryan. Keep up the good work.